Good morning, good morning. It's great to be with you. Good morning to you. Guess what, folks? We have action. Okay, we are ready. Oh, who was that? Oh, thank you, Ibrahim. Merci beaucoup. Okay.
Yeah, mercy bucket.
Mercy bucket, yeah. I think we are just checking one more thing here and we will get going with the quiz. My brilliant braille display decided to die just as I was about to start the lecture. All right, well, welcome to ITE Module 7. We're going to have last week's quiz first. We've all got our chat windows open, I hope. And don't, Kerry, don't you say yes, Miss Geraldine.
Yes, miss.
Okay, so question one. Which two features make laptops a good alternative to desktop computers? Is it A, compact design, B, lower costs, C, enhanced capabilities, or D, portability? Two answers.
We want two options.
Come on, lots more people out there. Okay, well, the correct answer was A, compact design, and D, portability. Nearly said the wrong one. Okay, question two. Which laptop device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, the display, B, the internal hard drive, C, the PC card, or D, the RAM? Go now. Okay, the correct answer was C, the PC card. I think most people got that. Okay, which type of memory is used in laptops? Is it A, DIMM, B, RIM, C, SIM, and D, SODIMM? Go now.
Oh, everybody who's saying A is wrong.
Okay, so it was D, SODIMM, S-O-D-I-M-M. Okay. Question four, which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface? Was it ACCI, B, ACPI, C, AMD, D, APM, or E, APA? Go now. Have a go, everybody. Don't be frightened of getting it wrong. Okay, the question was, which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface? Is it A, CCI, B, ACPI, C, AMD, D, APM, or E, APA?
Just a hint for people, if you're running Ventrilo, you would probably want to be doing this in headphones, not with speakers, unless you've got more than one person listening. It's very difficult to hear the audio on speakers. It's not designed for speakers, given the levels and stuff we use, so... if you are using speakers, consider using headphones if you're by yourself.
Okay, and the correct answer was D, APM. Okay, question five. What do FireWire and USB devices have in common? Is it A, only one of these devices can be used at a time? B, they are considered hot swappable devices? C, they can't be used with desktop PCs? And D, they are parallel communications devices? Excellent. You're all correct. They are considered hot swappable devices. Okay, question six. What should a user do when operations on a USB memory device have been completed and it is necessary to remove it from the laptop computer? Should you A, reboot the computer, B, choose Start Control Panel System, select the USB device, then the Properties tab, then click, then remove, have a cup of coffee on the way. C, click the safely remove hardware icon in the Windows system tray, or D, just remove the USB device from the computer. Ah, look at them all go. Who said D? You don't just remove it, otherwise you'll lose data. Okay, so you should do C. Click the safely remove hardware icon in the Windows system tray. And we talked about the alternative to that last week, which was using Insert and F11.
And what happens if you don't safely remove them, Leon?
You can kill them.
Sorry to single you out there, but you did talk about it so graphically last week.
I don't spare any details, Kerry.
We've
no,
noticed.
You won't. Don't worry. Okay. We're like that, aren't we, Kerry? Okay. Which two steps are recommended when cleaning a laptop LCD screen? Okay, so we want two. A, clean the display screen using tissue moistened with water. B, disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. C, remove all sources of power immediately after cleaning this display screen. D, power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. Or E, remove the LCD screen from the laptop. Go now, we want to.
Now, whoever said AD, and I'm not going to look up who you were, if you put water on my laptop screen, you're fired.
Okay, so the correct answers were B, which was disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. And the other correct answer was D, power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen.
Can anybody tell me why you'd power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen? Well, no, it's more actually that you'll damage the inside of your laptop if you get any cleaning stuff in it while there's power applied. You'll let the smoke out.
Yeah. Okay, question 8. What is the easiest and least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? A, is it replace the parts regularly? B, clean the laptop regularly? C, do a clean reinstall of the operating system? D, backup important information monthly? Go now.
What is the question again, please?
Yep, I'll read that again for you. And it was the last question, which is, what is the easiest and least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Is it A, replace the parts regularly? B, clean the laptop regularly? C, do a clean reinstall of the operating system? Or D, backup important information monthly? Okay. The correct answer was to, actually B, keep your laptop nice and clean. Clean it regularly. That's right.
Okay. And Ian's logged on from Curtin, I think.
Okay, so, all right, that was well done, everyone. So today, as I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about printers and scanners. So we're going to be talking about how they operate and what you should look for if you're in a position of buying a new printer, what you need to connect your printers to your network. And a lot of people still, old-fashioned people, not so much us because of our lack of sight, but in the sighted community, most people are wanting hard copies. You heard that terminology, or paper copies as well, so you're obviously going to have to print them out. Same as when you're dealing with your correspondence, notes of that you're referring on, things you want to keep for posterity's sake, whatever it is, you will need a printer to do that. So we're going to be talking all about the different types of printers. Also going to be talking about scanners. And
I was just going to point out here, guys, just with the printers section, you do need to know about the printer section, partially because this course is HP IT Essentials 1, and HP make printers, and secondary because there will be a question in your module tests about what is the voltage on the primary corona wire of a laser printer. So make sure you know that. So onwards and upwards, and we'd also talk about scanners.
Yes, and we will be talking about the primary corona wire as well. So, okay, but as somebody working in the computer industry, you may be asked the question too by people, what's the best sort of printer to buy for my computer? It's important that you have a good understanding of the different printer types so that you can give them the correct advice. So we're going to talk about what type of environments are best when you're using a specific printer, what's suitable for a specific environments. things you're going to have to look at with regard to with the capacity and the speed of the printer that you are using. So when you look at, say, for example, an inkjet computer, that's going to be generally a slower one, and you probably be using that more so in a home environment or a small office. When you're looking at capacity of printers, you'll be looking at the characters or the number of pages per minute that the printer prints at. So, you know, you're going to be looking at the thing, say, for example, a speed of an inkjet printer is 2 to 6 pages per minute, whereas a laser printer is going to give you somewhere in the capacity of about 8 to 200 pages per minute.
I was just going to say, how far away from that microphone are you, Geraldine? Because you're just a little bit quiet, I think.
Oh, I'm just about kissing the microphone at the moment.
Okay, no, that's slightly better. It's very sensitive to how far away from it you are.
How's that?
Ah, gorgeous.
Lovely. Okay, the types of printers too you can get. You can get colour printers, black and white printers, and again, it's going to depend on the type of use that you want your printer to have as to what... you know, or what's required in your office environment. And was there a question, Sue?
Yeah,
I know. Well, we'll carry on then. Okay. So if you're in an environment where you're going to be needing to printing off in colour, which is a consideration in many office environments, you know, you're going to have to advise them to get a colour printer. Bearing in mind that it's usually more expensive to buy the cartridges for the colour. But if that's what you need, that's what you have to advise your clients with. The quality of the printing that you're going to do is also important, and the quality of printing is actually measured in dots per inch or DPI. So if we're talking about dots per inch or DPI, we're talking about one and the same thing. If you've got a higher, the more DPI or dots per inch you get, the higher the resolution is that you're going to get. So when you've got a high resolution, your images and your text that are actually being printed out are going to be a lot clearer. Okay. So you would need to have both high quality ink or toner, and also the type of paper that you're using is important too. Some of the cheaper papers around don't give you quite as good a production. So. Okay, the other thing that the printer needs to be is reliable. Okay, you don't want to be having one that's breaking down every 5 minutes, so it's important to have a very reliable printer. Looking at things like the warranty that's available on your printer, what's the backup that you get, what is the average length of the time that your printer's going to work without failing, which is when we talk about the MTBF. And you will find those things in your manual. And if you haven't still got the manual, or you haven't got a scanner to read the manual, then you can look that up on the manufacturer's website. One of the considerations that you need to think about too is things like what is the total cost of your printer? Okay, so
Can I just put something in here, just because I've just sort of, your notes have wandered on and I've just missed my opportunity. Gemma and I basically wanted to remain engaged and eventually got married, and one of the things that made sure that that would actually happen was that we actually got a reliable and working printer, because every time at assignment time, Gemma's stress levels would go through the roof and she would start screaming at the bubble jet and cursing and swearing about how all the ink had dried up and it wasn't going to work. And I realised that if I wanted to marry this woman, that we would have to have a laser printer, because they just work. And when it came time to print her assignments, it was a case of hitting file and print. Now, it is very important as a blind person, and this is critical for blind people, because sighted people want you to print things like shopping lists and all that sort of thing. Don't go and buy a bubble jet because they're cheap, unless you're going to use it at least once a week. We went and bought a bubble jet, and all the ink dries up, and you don't know whether it prints or not. Gemma actually put in an assignment that was all faded, and her lecturer went, well, no, I think you need to change your ink tanks, which, of course, we went out and paid $20 a tank and did. But if you are blind, you want a printer that you're actually going to know whether it's going to print or not. And we find the lasers are good because you can smell the toner on the pages. Toner is probably also carcinogenic, but don't let that stop you. You can actually tell that the printer has printed. And it also makes sure that you can be 99% assured that your laser print is going to work and what comes out on the pages is legible. So I would push people towards a cheap laser rather than a cheap bubble jet, unless you absolutely have to print out colours and photos and things. And Geraldine's just about to hook into how much it costs to run a printer, and once you hear about these figures, you'll understand why I'm pushing for the lasers rather than the, I call them trouble jets.
And the other thing is, too, that when you've got, you know, you're always changing cartridges on the others, aren't you? Whereas the laser ones seem to last a lot longer without, you know, before you need to change your toner. Okay. So, and also, Kerry, you could certainly do a ad for Save Your Marriage.
Are you having relationship difficulties? Are you stressed every time she hits the print button? Does your heart rate go to 150 beats per minute and you start sweating uncontrollably? Get yourself a cheap HP laser today. The laser will make your life so much simpler. It will calm you down, and the prints nearly always come out right. And when they don't, there's reliable technicians to fix them. Laser printers, they're the way printing should be. There you go, Geraldine.
Thank you, Kerry. Now, I just cannot do that, but I would be breaking up, cracking up, laughing if I tried to do that. No one can do voiceover like Kerry. Okay, so we digress. But, yeah, look, you need to look at the total cost of the printer, not just the initial cost, because these days you can, I'm talking Australian dollars here, but, you know, you can get cheap printers for about $30, $40 these days. They're just about giving them away, but you've also got to look at the costs of your cartridges, how much, you know, per page, your maintenance costs, you know, all those types of things, warranty costs. So look into the, you know, total costs that are involved when you're actually deciding which one to buy.
I've actually seen printers that have been $50 for the printer and $90 for a set of replacement cartridges.
Cartridges, yeah. So it's a real throwaway world, you know, I think. I know the last time...
They do indeed.
That was Samsung, was it?
Yeah, although watch the toner replacement cost on the colour lasers, Dean, and cheap colour laser isn't as good as you'd like to think. Cheap bubble jet will give you nicer colours than cheap colour laser. I would recommend having a bubble jet for printing photos and a laser for printing black and white, but it's your life and you do whatever you want.
Yeah, I have two printers set up in mine. Office at the moment, and use the laser for all my black and white stuff. Very, very good they are. Very fast too. So, yeah, do consider that. When you look at the longevity, I think the laser's definitely the way to go for the average person. Okay, so you need to look at the types of the compatibility that you're going to have, what type of interface the printer has. Mostly you'll find that the printer is going to connect to your home computer. They're going to have either a parallel USB or a wireless interface. And a lot of the bigger businesses have got them connecting, networking, using a network cable. So if we look at, say, each one in its own right here, the serial, with serial connection, you've got data transfer where you've got the single bits of information in a single cycle, and it's used for things like your dot matrix printers. Don't see so many of those these days, but they are still around.
I've actually got three of them in my house.
Ah, okay. So they're used because those printers don't need a high speed rate of data transfer. The parallel interface gives you faster data transfer than does a serial interface, and it's with parallel data transfer, it's a movement of multiple bits of information in a single cycle. So you've got a wider path for the information to move to or from the printer.
However, because you're sending multiple bits down one cable at the same time, cable length is limited. You cannot reliably run a 20-metre parallel cable to your printer, even if they are on sale from your local computer store.
Remember this one, guys? IEEE? We're talking about it again. The IEEE 1284 is your current standard for parallel printer ports. And the enhanced parallel port, or EPP, and the Enhanced Capabilities Port, or ECP, are the two modes of operation within the IEEE 1284 standard, and that allows for a bi-directional communication. Okay, another type of interface that we're going to come across is the SCSI. Anyone remember what SCSI stands for?
Oh, Chris, sorry.
Okay, yes, it stands for Small Computer System Interface, or SCSI, and that's a type of interface that uses a parallel communication technology, and it gets higher data transfer rates. The one that we see most commonly in our home office environment is the USB, and that's usually what we see. Most of the printers connected via USB. Anyone tell me what USB stands for, apart from Chris?
Universal Serial Bus.
That's correct, yes. Well done.
We used to call it Useless Serial Bus before it actually became, back in the days of Windows 95, OSR2 and Windows 98, we all believed that USB actually stood for Useless Serial Bus because there are all these amazing ports that they'd stuck on the back of these computers and none of the drivers worked for them. Once Windows 2000 and Windows XP came out, things got significantly better with USB, and it's not so useless anymore. However, one thing you must keep in mind about USB, and I don't know whether this is in Geraldine's notes, and if they are, I'll probably get a smack. There's two standards for USB, 1.1, which is 12 megabits per second, and 2.0, which is 480 megabits per second. If you are going to print a lot of graphics and high-volume printing stuff onto your bubble jet, you will want one that goes at USB 2 speeds because it will print a lot faster. Otherwise, your computer will be sitting there for a half an hour printing out the average family portrait.
Okay, so when you plug in your USB device, your printer, hopefully it's all hunky-dory and the device that you've put in actually gets automatically detected, and then it loads the drivers and the installation process goes smoothly, we hope. That's another one is a FireWire, which is also known as iLink, and it's of the IEEE 1394 variety. Gives you high-speed communication, and it's platform independent. So it allows you to connect things like your printers, scanners, digital cameras, those types of things, and hard drive. And FireWire devices allows them to be hot swappable. So it gives a single plug and socket connection, and it can attach up to 63 devices. FireWire has a data transfer rate of 400 megabits per second. I would advise you to know things like how many devices FireWire supports, because those types of things do come up near exams. Also, data transfer rates would be another thing that can come up in your exam. So you have been warned, okay? Okay, they can be another interface that's used is an Ethernet connection. You use that when you're sharing printers over a network, okay? Most of the network printers use a connector now, when we're connecting an Ethernet cable, it uses a something connector for my local students. We worked with them this morning. Ah, they all got it, folks. So they use an RJ45 connector. Okay, and that's when you plug in your Ethernet cable into your computer, you are pushing on the end of the cable, that is an RJ45 connector. Okay, all right, so the other way interface that you can use is wireless. So things like infrared, Bluetooth, and Wi-Fi, or wireless fidelity, that stands for. Okay, for infrared communication, you have transmitters and receivers. They need to be both on both devices. And with infrared, and this is one of the disadvantages of it, there needs to be a clear line of sight between both your transmitter and receiver. Okay, so if anything's in the way or it's not a clear line of sight, it's not going to work well. Another thing I would suggest is you take note of what I'm about to say now, because these things will come up. The maximum distance for infrared is 3.7 metres, or if you're in the old money, it's 12 feet. And it uses a type of light that is invisible to the human eye. just as a little bit of useless trivia there. But
now
please remember.
3.7 metres?
3.7
metres. Yep. Can anybody tell me what else infrared is used for? And it's very common. In fact, most people have got one.
Yes,
remote controls.
Okay. That's why when, you know, you're changing the channel on the television or something and the dog stands in the way. I don't know whether anyone's had that happen before, but I certainly have, and the channel won't change. There's a blockage in the line of sight.
That's when you get an extra power infrared transmitter and drill a heat hole through the dog.
So, yes, you need a clear line of sight, so there's a clear travel between the transmitter and the receiver. Okay, so everyone can tell me how many feet is the maximum or how much metres, can't they?
How many metres is infrared, the range?
Yay, we got it here, the local students.
And how many feet?
Cyberland, 12, well done, okay. All right, so you have been warned. We do try and emphasise things that are going to come up in your exam because we all want you to pass. So you are lucky. We're so nice to you, aren't you? Okay, Bluetooth uses unlicensed radio frequency, and it gives you a short-range communication, things like wireless headsets, when you're using or syncing up your PDA or your mobile phone to your laptop or your desktop. You use Bluetooth to sync them up a lot of the time. My Brailliant will work using Bluetooth, or it uses USB as well. So, okay, your Bluetooth adapter is going to let you connect your devices, and very, very useful thing is Bluetooth. Okay.
Anyone know the range of Bluetooth?
30 metres.
No, you're three times too high. 10 metres. There are, of course, devices that violate every Bluetooth standard in the book and claim 100 metres range, but a good brick wall will stop that dead in its tracks.
Okay, Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi, I'll try and say that again, Wi-Fi, thank you, there are a couple of different standards for Wi-Fi, and they also have the IEEE standard, and they are 802.11, and you get 802.11b, and that gives you transfer data rates at 11 megabits per second. And there is 802.11g, which allows transfer rates of 54 megabits per second. With 802.11g, the products are backwards compatible with 802.11b, so the latter being the newer of the two.
Although, we were reading the JB Hi-Fi catalogue yesterday, and a lot of the wireless cards were actually listed as AGN, and they didn't actually have the B designation listed, which was interesting. Well, I'm going to talk to one of my theoretically more knowledgeable friends and see if that is indeed the case. But I think it's they should be backwards compatible with B. Although if you're buying B gear in the year 2007, you're obviously on an extremely tight budget, or you're doing long distance work. G gear is probably similarly priced now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, now we were talking a little bit about the earlier about the different types of printers. Now I want to go into sort of each of the types of printers in a little bit more detail. So we'll talk about laser printers first. So it gives you high quality work, and it's reasonably fast, and it uses laser to, as it says, to create the images. So the central part of your laser printer the central core of it is the electrophotographic drum. So it's a metal cylinder, and it's got a light sensitive insulating material around it. So when you have the beam of the laser light, it actually strikes on the drum, and it then becomes a conductor, and that is the point where the laser light hits it. So then you have the drum rotating, and the laser beam draws an electrostatic image on the drum, and then the undeveloped or latent image is passed by a supply of your ink or your toner, and then it gets attracted to it. So we know all about attraction because that's how Gemma and Kerry fell in love over a laser printer.
We did, though. We did. She's absolutely right.
Okay, so the drum then turns and it brings the image into contact with the paper, and then the toner is attracted from the drums, and then the paper actually passes through a fuser, and there's a number of hot rollers there, and that melts the toner onto the paper. So you know when you're actually printing out, you feel the paper's quite warm. That's why, okay?
And the order in which these steps occur is in your final test. Make sure you know which order. So it's developing. Anyway, you make sure you read your notes. And don't use cheap paper because it curls from heat and jams. And in fact, if the paper jams and the heating element is on, it's actually possible for your laser printer in exceptional circumstances to catch fire. And that will potentially ruin your marriage if your laser printer burns out. I suppose I'll just go and see another old flame. Anyway, let's move on.
Oh, he's quick, this boy. He is quick. Okay. All right. So when you're going through the actual printing process, I know a lot of this sounds very basic and everything else, but you do need to know all this for your exam. So we will briefly go through it. The first step is the cleaning. So when you have an image that goes onto the paper, the drum has separated from the paper. Any of the remaining toner needs to be removed from the drum. So you can have a printer can have a blade that actually scrapes all your excess toner from the drum. And some of the printers actually use an AC voltage on a wire, and that actually removes the charge from the drum surface and allows the excess toner to fall away from the drum. Then you'll find that the excess toner is stored in a used toner container, and you can empty that or discard it. Okay, the next step was conditioning. So you have involves removing any old latent image from the drum and conditioning the drum for a new latent image. So it's done by placing a special wire or grid or roller that receives a negative charge of approximately 600 volts DC across the surface of the drum. The charged wire is called the primary corona, and that will come up in your exams too. The roller is called a conditioning roller.
Question for people. What sort of electricity holds the image onto the drum? Can anybody tell me? I'm just waiting for a remote answer, but Gemma is correct. Static electricity.
Well done. Okay. Our next process is the writing process, and that has the where the scanning the photosensitive drum with the laser beam happens. So you find that all of the parts of the drum are exposed to the light, and that has the surface charge reduced to about 100 volts DC. It's got that particular charge is a lower negative charge than the remainder of the drum, and as the drum turns, you get an invisible latent image created on the drum. And the next stage is the developing. So in that developing phase, the toner is applied to that latent image on the drum. The toner is a negatively charged combination of plastic and metal particles, and the control blade then holds the toner at a very short or microscopic actually distance from the drum. And then the toner moves from the control blade to the positively charged latent image on the drum. Okay, so this is how they work. Okay, then it transfers the toner to the latent image and onto the paper, and the transfer or secondary corona places a positive charge on the paper. And because you've got the drum which was actually charged negatively, the toner on the drum gets attracted to the paper, and the image is sort of put onto the paper and held in place by a positive charge. In the last or step of it all, which is step 6, you have the fusing process. And we call it that because the toner gets fused permanently to the paper. So you have the printing paper roll between a heat roller and a pressure roller. And as you get the paper moving through the heated roller and the pressure roller, the toner gets melted or fused with the fibres that are in the paper, and then the paper comes out of the printer into your output tray.
Now, I think that's all pretty impressive. If you look at a laser printer that's doing 30 pages a minute, that whole process is happening once every 2 seconds.
Okay. If you want to remember those processes, here's a little rhyme, a rhyme for you. Okay. I haven't thought of a rhyme yet, but anyway. Continuous care will delay trouble forever. Cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, fusing. Okay, so there's a little rhyme. Continuous care will delay trouble forever. Okay.
Which is not true, but they'd like to think it will.
Yes. So that helps you remember continuous for cleaning, conditioning for care, etc., etc. Okay? I'll have to think of a song for that. Ta-da.
Okay. Can we just move on with the lecture? That'll be good, yeah.
You don't want me to sing a song. No? Okay.
Not at this stage.
Sing out loud. Okay. Right, I won't sing. Okay. You really don't want me to sing. Okay. Okay, the primary corona or grid of the conditioning roller can be dangerous, so be very careful with it. It has a voltage of about 6,000 volts. So not a good idea to be working on it. And I would advise you not to be working inside a laser printer, okay?
Unless, of course, your wife has informed you that there's a paper jam and could you please come in and fix it. But yes, you shouldn't. Yes, informed. That was the word I was going to use. She usually comes in grumpily and says, there is a paper jam, can you fix it? Because I can't get it out of the printer. But yeah, do not work on these things when you are going to... don't work on the actual guts of the printer when it's powered up, because I can assure you that 6,000 volts DC is enough to pick you up and smudge you against the opposite wall, and such a smudging is somewhat permanent.
Not a good idea. Okay, another type of printer that you can come across, across is an impact printer. We don't see as many of them now, but they remember those clunk, 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 bang, 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 bang ones we had? A lot of those are the dot matrix. They have a print head that actually strikes a ribbon that contains ink, and it makes quite a racket. If anyone hasn't heard them, they're quite noisy, but it actually imprints the image onto the paper. They had like a daisy wheel, I think they called the heads of them.
No, they're two different technologies. The dot matrix ones had a head that had 9 or 24 wires that went... and the daisy ones went... silly noises from me. And they were little wheels that actually spun around and got to the letter and went onto the paper. And that's the sort of noise they made. So that's just some more of the fun you can get ITE lectures.
Did the daisy wheel have, were they both wheels, though?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, and the $12, $12 ribbons, yes, they are $12 ribbons. In fact, they were $2.50 if you could get them at staff price. Yeah, we chucked some ribbons out. We've got some Epson LX 800s and we've got an LQ, which are going to head for the nature strip next time we have bulk refuse, which is sad. But yeah, so, and to change the typeface on a daisy wheel, you actually pulled off all the little wheels and put the italics wheels on or the bold wheels on or whatever. And that was all a bit stressful, whereas dot matrixes could actually construct the characters out of the 9 wires or the 24 wires that would strike the ribbon and strike the paper. However, once people saw bubble jet printing, dot matrix was no longer good enough and it looked all crummy and they used to get all cranky and angry at you because you were a blind person running a really cheap to run dot matrix printer and they hated it, so you went out and got a bubble jet and threatened your marriage.
Yeah, the daisy wheels were... They had the little letters imprinted on them, didn't they?
The daisy wheels? Yeah, they had little letters on them. Yeah, and they'd hit the ribbon and then that letters would turn up. But the letters on the daisy wheel weren't made of dots, so they actually looked nicer. They looked like a typewriter.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I think they had the same in the old electric typewriters as well. Yeah, okay. Okay, so your impact printers, your daisy wheels or your dot matrix, they were cheap to use, cheaper to keep going. And they also had the advantage that they could do carbon copies. Don't know whether you're all too young to remember carbon copying around here, aren't they, Trevor?
No, I remember carbon copies. In fact, when I was in Year 6 and writing out illegal chain letters, I came up with the idea of having 5 sheets of carbon paper and 6 sheets of regular paper, and we just wrote the chain letter once onto the top sheet and the carbon down onto the other 5.
Did it?
It certainly did, and that was much quicker than writing out all the chain letters. Carbon is still used in receipt books and invoice books, and it's also used in those sorts of receipts where you need multiple copies and it sort of spits out the 5 thick thing with the carbon stuff and you get your copy, and credit card machines often use it for the ones that aren't sort of, you know, super duper. They go according to Gemma. We'll take a word for that. So you've got the... And,
And for anyone that hasn't seen carbon paper or hasn't used it, it's navy blue, for anyone that knows the colours, and it gets all over your fingertips. So, yeah, it's very thin, yeah. Okay, so some of the disadvantages of your impact printers, as we talked about, they're noisy, okay? They don't do graphics so well. And they've got very limited as far as colour capability.
Although I'd like to point out, they are slow, I'd like to point out anybody who thinks impact printers are noisy should sleep next to a Braille embosser.
Yes, I have to actually, when I'm in my wearing my other hat and in my other job where I do research, I actually have to close my door of my office every time I want to use my embosser. It's rather noisy. Okay, the whole floor where I work would know about it.
No. Geraldine is the one who's lecturing, and Gemma's my wife.
I know.
Oh, I missed the joke. Oh, no, Gemma's noisy, yes. Yes, no, she's certainly noisier than a Braille embosser, and I would say that anybody who wants to know what noisy is could see Gemma.
Yes, and you can't confuse me because I'm so quiet.
Gemma's hoping that we'd move on here. What's the colour red?
Okay, all right. Well, while they're picking on you, Gemma, they're not picking on me. So, okay, your Daisy Wheel printer, as I mentioned, has got the letters and numbers, and it's in my notes now, and characters on the wheel, and it gets rotated until each has the required characters in place. Your dot matrix, if you remember, similar to the Daisy Wheel, except the wheel containing the characters or printhead actually contains pins. And they are surrounded, as Kerry mentioned, by electromagnets, and the pins push forward onto the ink ribbon, and that gives you the characters. The number of pins on a printhead is 9 or 24, and it indicates the quality of the print. So the highest quality print that is introduced by your dot matrix printer is referred to as the near letter quality, or NLQ, and you may have heard that term before. Most of the other thing that the dot matrix printers did was they used continuous paper feed, where you had, remember those big reams that came out of a box on the floor behind the thing? So you'd have perforations on the between the sheets, so you could actually tear it off, that sort of thing. Great for blind people, they were not.
Well, we never had a problem with it, actually. It was just the way you used to get a printer desk, which had this... You had this... No, we're not. We had the box under the table, and then there was a slot in the table, and you'd run the paper through the slot and into the printer. Yeah, I had a... No, I had a printer table with a proper slot where the paper sat in a little paper cupboard and came up through the slot and into the printer. Behave yourself, George.
Okay. Inkjet printers, all right, so we're going on to inkjets now.
I call them stinkjet, but lots of people like them.
Inkjets. Inexpensive is probably one of their better advantages, because when you're comparing them to a laser, the initial cost, and that's what we were talking about before, the initial cost is one consideration, but you need to look at the total cost over time. Okay. When we're talking, again, about the print quality of your inkjet printer, we're talking dots per inch, or DPI. So the higher the DPI gives you better imaging. They have ink-filled cartridges in them, and those cartridges spray ink onto the page through tiny holes. The holes are called nozzles, and the ink gets actually sprayed onto the page through those little nozzles. Okay, there are a couple of different types of inkjet nozzles. There's a thermal nozzle, and that works by having a pulse of electrical current, and that gets applied to the heating chambers around the nozzles. Then you get the heat creates a bubble of steam in the chamber, and the steam forces the ink out through the nozzle and onto the paper. The other one is the piezoelectric, and you get crystals located in the ink reservoir at the back of each nozzle, and then a charge gets applied to the crystal and it causes it to vibrate, and the vibration of the crystal controls then the flow of ink that gets onto the paper. Who does? Okay. Inkjet printers use plain paper, so that makes them sort of fairly economical as far as the type of paper you get.
Just a message to Sabode, if we can't hear you, you can't ask a question. So you'll either have to type it into chat or you'll have to fix your audio settings. Sorry.
And as Kerry mentioned earlier, you can also get create good quality graphics and photographs. So with the correct photographic paper in your inkjet printer, you can print off your photographs as well.
You can also empty your wallet rather quickly, as we discovered by printing wedding photos after we had the laser printer for our assignments and the inkjet for our wedding pictures. And it's a good way to send yourself broke by printing digital camera pictures out on your inkjet printer. And that's why it's often cheaper to go down to the photo kiosks and print it down there, because it's much cheaper per print than it will be to run them out on your printer.
Okay, so when you have the inkjet print completed, paper then leaves the printer, and it's often a little bit wet, so watch out there because you can smudge that print. I find most of the printers I use these days fairly quick at drying. So if you know, the 10 to 15 seconds is probably a good idea to leave it alone. The advantages, I guess, of inkjets, they're low cost, you get high resolution, and they're quick to start up or warm up. Some of the disadvantages you get is that the nozzles are prone to clogging, the cartridges can be more expensive than what your actual printer was. I know a couple of times I've gone to get cartridges and I've ended up buying a new printer. The real throwaway society, isn't it? Okay, but I have a laser now too.
I actually know people who buy a $70 Lexmark Z1000, print out all of their CD labels and stuff, and print the thing into the ground until it runs out of ink, and then they just pick up the whole thing and drop it in the wheelie bin, walk over to the Chinese swap meet stand and buy another Lexmark Z1000 and do the same to it.
Sort of have a problem with this throwaway society, though. I really.
Oh, so do I. Yeah, oh, it's horrible. It's crazy, throwaway society, you know? Is horrendous, and the environmental damage of these cheap inkjets ending up in landfill. They're certainly not going to print anything in landfill.
No, it's terrible. You know, you think, but I mean, what are people going to do if it's going to cost them more for their cartridges?
That's exactly right. And if you're blind people and you print one thing every 6 months, you'll find that your ink cartridges will dry up. So go buy a laser. Or keep cranking the old dot matrix over. That's what a lot of people do. Although you've got to watch out for the ribbons and them drying up as well, although it's less prone to do so because you've got that sponge in the middle that's full of ink. Don't open up a dot matrix ribbon cartridge, don't open up a toner cartridge, and do not open up ink tanks. Yes, Gemma's admitted to doing that once, and I bet you got ink everywhere.
She was worse than a squid.
She was worse than a squid. That's right. So if you scare her, there'll be ink everywhere. So yeah, don't open up your toner cartridges. And Gemma's not talking today because we've embarrassed her, I think.
Okay. Solid ink printers. It's another type of printer. They have a solid stick of ink rather than a large compartment of toner or ink cartridges. They produce very good quality images, and the actual ink sticks are non-toxic, so that's another good thing for the environment. They actually work by melting the ink stick, and they spray the ink through nozzles again, and then that ink gets sprayed onto a drum, and the drum transfers the ink to the paper. They produce really good colour prints, fairly easy to use, and they are fairly flexible as regard to the type of paper that you use them. Some of the disadvantages of solid ink printers are that they're expensive. The ink itself is expensive as well, and they are slow at warming up. Okay, the some of your other printer types, you can get thermal printers. Some of your cash registers or your older fax machines have thermal printers, and they use thermal paper and the chemically treated paper, and it's got a like a waxy feel to it. It gets the paper actually gets black when it's heated, and the thermal print heads are about the width of the paper. So the areas of the print head are heated, and that heated head makes a pattern on the paper, and you actually find that the paper is actually supplied in a roll. So you see a lot of those in cash registers and that type of thing.
One of the problems with them, though, and I'm sure this might be in the notes, is that I'm very quick to print out, so it goes, and out comes your receipt. 2 weeks later, after it's been in your wallet or next to your body or in the sun, it goes blank. And one of the things that the Australian Tax Office is always trying to get more money out of us said was that you must scan in or keep other copies of your receipts that are not printed on thermal paper. Just because your receipts go blank doesn't mean you don't have to pay tax. And also for warranty purposes as well, which is why my gorgeous darling wife scans in all of our thermal receipts with our scanner and prints them out on our laser printer. She tries to get around to it before they're faded, but when they do fade, she then brings them back to life with the GIMP, which is an image editing project, and she actually can then restore those to a certain extent.
Okay, the thermal printers are going to be good in the fact that you do get longer life with them because they've got only a few moving parts in them. But the paper's expensive, and as Kerry just mentioned, you've got short shelf life for the paper. You get poor quality image, and the paper needs to be stored at room temperature. Okay, so there's some of your disadvantages. Another type is your dye sublimation printer. They give you high quality photos, and they're great for graphics. And it uses a solid sheet of ink, and it can change directly from solid to gas. And that process of changing from solid to gas is called sublimating. So the printhead actually passes over the sheet of cyan, magenta, yellow, and a clear overcoat. And there's a pass made for each colour. So that's why they're very good for colour. They are produced, as I mentioned, high-quality images. And when you're talking about that overcoat layer, it gives you a reduction in things like smearing, and it gives you an increase in moisture resistance. The actual media for them is expensive, and they are actually better for colour than they are for black and white. Okay, so they're often used in photography and that type of thing, or where you need high quality graphics. Okay, we've talked about all the different types of printers. So when you're purchasing a printer, you'll find that it comes with a book. If you can, you can read the book, or you could scan the book, or otherwise look up the information on your manufacturer website.
Or the book is in the PDF on the CD. Yes.
On the CD.
So this Cisco course is getting you all ready to read PDFs, so you should be able to read most things. Isn't that wonderful?
And your CD is going to have all your drivers and your manuals, all your diagnostic software as well, that type of thing. So. Alright, so your steps in setting up the printer, obviously you're going to make sure that, like when any new product you're getting, check everything's there that's supposed to be. Usually there's a checklist there, so make sure that it's all there, otherwise you're going to have to say, look, we're missing something, and go back to your supplier.
Now there's another gotcha here. I just thought I'd mention this, and I mention every year, a lot of printers do not come with the printer cable. So it's going to look like a real Dorcas if you go in and buy a printer and then come home and you don't have an A to B USB cable or a Centronics cable that will actually fit your printer. So get somebody to check the box and make sure that you have a printer cable. Of course, the shop that sold you the printer will probably sell you the printer cable at a convenient $30. You can probably walk down the shop road to a computer shop and get it for $5. But you do need a cable to go with your printer.
The other gotcha that can happen is sometimes some of the packing material, there's little sort of inserts, or there's sellotape that's holding, or tape that's holding down some parts of the printer. So you've got to make sure that you get all your packing material out and make sure that all those bits of tape are unstuck before you go and try and use it. Okay, also things like you'll find that the paper trays won't have been in, or generally aren't installed. And of course, if you haven't bought a ream of paper, you might be in trouble too. Okay, so all those things when you're actually unpacking. Obviously, once you've got it unpacked and you put it where you want it, you need it to connect it to your computer. Don't forget, to, of course, to put it into the electricity. Troubleshooting 101, ITE, is it connected? Check your hardware. Okay, so as Kerry mentioned, you may not have the right cable in there, so but at this stage you'd be connecting your data cable to the port on the back of the printer, the communication port, and if you've got a USB or FireWire, you would then, or parallel port, to the, you would connect it to the corresponding cable port to the printer port. The other end, or your data cable, goes to the corresponding port on the back of the computer. And again, if you were using the printer in a network situation, you would connect the network cable to the network port.
Now, just one point here, people. Often, in big letters on the front of the user manual or on page one or two, just after the electromagnetic interference statement, there is often instructions that say, please install these drivers before you connect your printer. So do read the instructions, because if you do it in the other way around, it probably won't work because it won't find its drivers and you'll have all sorts of grief. So do read the instructions and make sure that you actually run the CD first if that's what it wants, or you plug the printer in first if that's what it wants.
Okay, and then just a word of warning, don't plug them into an UPS, okay? Okay, if you do, you'll get a power surge, and it's going to, when you turn the printer on, and it'll damage your UPS. Okay, so not a good idea.
In fact, our fearless leader plugged the laser printer into the UPS and wondered why there was all of a sudden a... I said, well, you teach ITU, you should know better. It's got to be plugged into a proper PowerPoint. And he had to go and get an extension lead and plug it into a proper PowerPoint because he'd succeeded in overloading the UPS.
Yep.
Depends on the dot matrix printer, and if Windows has a driver for the dot matrix printer, it is advisable that you use it. However, if your dot matrix printer is compatible with an Epson, you can use something like an Epson driver. If you use something like text-only printer, it's going to look pretty crummy. So do try and get drivers for your dot matrix where they exist, or find out which Epson or IBM ProWriter that they emulate. I know more about dot matrix than you can possibly imagine, but unfortunately this lecture doesn't have time for me to expound on all of my tedious and boring knowledge on the subject.
Okay, as Kerry mentioned, as far as installing your device drivers, after you've connected your power and your data cables to your printer, hopefully your operating system will discover the printer, okay, and then it's going to try and install the drivers. And it's at that stage you might get prompted to insert the disk. Usually these things walk you through the process, so it's usually quite painless. It'll discover the driver. Okay, the printer drivers are just a software program, and they allow the computer and the printer to talk to each other, basically, or communicate. They give you an interface for in which you can configure your printer options, and each of your printer models has its own unique drivers. They get updated fairly often, so you know you can actually do a driver update to get better performance out of your printers, or if you've got any problems. If you wanted to find out if you've got a new driver available, you'd go to the manufacturer website, and there's usually a link there that will tell you, and then there will be a download option, and that'll allow you to download the latest driver. They'll usually come in a zipped or compressed format, and I'm sure most of you these days have used or have seen at least use a zip format. When you download the file to a folder, you then unzip the contents or uncompress them, and good idea to save your instructions to a separate folder on your computer. Once you've done that, you'd install the downloaded driver.
We're not quite sure what you mean by that, but basically you follow the instructions and you do what they say. So if the instructions say install the drivers first, you install the drivers first and you then plug the printer in and turn it on. Or if they say plug the printer in and turn it on and then install the drivers, that is what you do.
Okay. And then you'd test your new drivers too, so you might want to do a few tests to make sure that everything's working hunky-dory. And you can do that doing things like print test and that type of thing. Okay, your firmware basically is a set of instructions that are actually stored on the printer, and it controls how your printer operates. So you can upgrade firmware, and you do much the same as what you've done with your printer drivers. If you wanted to add more memory to your printer, that can be done, and that can give you better printing speed. They have a certain amount of memory in them, but generally the more memory your printer's got, the better it's going to work. Okay, some of your memory specifications, some of the manufacturers use standard types of memory, others use proprietary memory. So check your documentation for the type of memory and the speed and capacity of the memory that you've got. Some printers have got multiple memory slots, and to find out how many memory slots you've got and how many are available, you would need to open a compartment on the printer to check your memory population. If you were wanting to install more printer RAM, it's pretty much the process is, you know, turn off your printer first before you do anything, disconnect all your cables, you then open your memory compartment, put in your new memory modules. You might be replacing them, you might be taking old ones out, adding bigger memory modules. You close it up, then reconnect all your cables. Turn your power on, run a self-test and print a test page. That's pretty straightforward. Okay, some of the things that you need to consider are options on default settings. You find that each printer's got a different configuration, it's got different default options, so you can sort of configure it to how you want it, but some of the configurations or common ones, default ones that you get would be things like your paper type. It comes with like standard draft, glossy photo, your print quality. You can have different types of print quality like draft or normal. You can get print quality for photo or automatic. These are all things that you can configure yourself. For colour printing, you'll get multiple colours, black and white. You only get black ink obviously used. You can do grayscale printing, which is where you get a colour image that's actually printed using only black ink. So it gives you sort of, as it sounds, a grey scale, so you get different variations of black. Okay. You'll also find there are standard paper sizes, different types of envelopes and business cards you can use. You'll get options like paper orientation. You can get landscape or portrait. The print layout will give you sort of normal or banner. You could get
just
a booklet.
Just a point here. If you're doing portrait, as a blind person, you need to know what portrait and landscape are. Portrait is where the page is taller than it is wide, like a person, a portrait of a person, and a landscape is where it is wider than it is tall, i.e. you're taking a picture of a landscape or some mountains or whatever. So it's very important that you know the difference between portrait and landscape if you're trying to set page preferences, and generally you'll be using portrait unless you're doing a wide spreadsheet or something that's particularly wide.
Okay, another thing option you can get is whether you want it single-sided or double-sided printing. That's used a lot, you know, the options, I should say, are used a lot when you're looking at, say, in offices. They might be doing a large printout where you've got numerous brochures to go out, so they want it to come out double-sided or duplex printing. Okay, so duplex meaning two. If you're writing letters, that type of thing, obviously you're going to be wanting one-sided. Okay, so there's lots of things that are customizable on your printer as well.
The gutter space is how much space is left at the bottom of the page, and printers only have a certain printable area, which is referred to as the printable area, funnily enough. And the gutter space is the space around the outside of the page that the printer is unable to put ink onto. Many laser printers have a quarter inch area of gutter around each side, so that you can only set your top, bottom, left and right margins to a quarter of an inch or more. And the specifications for the gutter spacing is in the specifications to your printer, which are usually in the back of the manual in one of the appendices even.
Okay, you can also optimise your printer's performance. So it's important sort of things like, you know, there are software tools that you can use it, so, or your print spool settings. That'll also give you things like the ability to cancel or pause your current print jobs. Colour calibration is another thing you can do, and it allows you to adjust your settings to match the colours on the screen with the colours on your printed sheet. Again, as Kerry mentioned, things like selecting landscape or portrait image layout is important too. Okay, I did mention testing, doing a test page. That's really a good idea because it allows you to check that your driver software is installed and it's all working okay. To do that, you'd actually, if you want to do it manually, some of them just come up and do automatically do a test page. But if it didn't, you'd go to your start menu. There's an option there called printers and faxes, and that'll bring you up with a printer and faxes menu. You would right-click the desired printer and then go to your Properties, General tab, Print Test Page. So it's fairly easy to do, and it will ask you if the page is printed correctly. So you can then hit OK and off you go. So, okay. You can also test a printer by printing a test page from an application such as Notepad, or you might do it from WordPad or something like that. So you can run it manually that way. So when you get there, Alt File Print or Control P will usually do that for you. You can also print from the command line or the CLI, the command line interface. It's limited to ASCII files such as .txt and .bat files. And if you wanted to print from a command line, you would do your start run, and you'll then get the pop-up box that comes up, or the dialog box. You type in CMD in the run box and then hit OK. And once you get to your command line prompt, you would put print space the file, all one word, .txt.
And that's an example file name, the file.txt.
Yeah. So, it might be print name.txt. It could be anything.
Geraldine Appreciation Letter.txt. Which could be a letter to the management to say what a wonderful instructor Geraldine is.
You'll get on, Kerry.
print quality, you can either set it to draft or you can set it to high. Draft prints faster and is of a lower quality. High obviously takes longer to print and is a nicer quality and often uses more ink.
Yeah, if you're just doing stuff for your own benefit at home and you want to save on ink, you can just do draft quality. So it is handy to be able to do that. Okay, also most of your printers got a front panel that you can check out, and it allows, it's got controls there that allow you to do test pages. It also will let you verify your printer operation quite as a separate thing from your network or from your computer. What was that question?
If you print in draft, it's actually a lighter printout and it's not as dark. And you've
uses
got to,
less ink.
Uses less ink, and you've got to have people with good eyesight and a nice light source to read it.
Okay, if you wanted to share a printer, okay, and that may be something that, you know, is, it's quite often done in networking. So printer sharing allows more than one person, multiple people, to access a printer. Many sort of corporate environments have a shared printer.
Did you want me to summarise this one? Because it's not difficult.
Yeah,
you go start and you
I'll have a drink.
Yeah, that's right. I thought you might need one, so I thought I'd do that while you had a drink. So you go start, and in the start menu there is the printers and faxes. You right click on the printer, you then select sharing, you then feed in a name for the printer, and then you hit apply and then OK, and a little hand shows up next to the printer icon to show that it's shared out on the network. The hand being that of a businessman with a suit sleeve. You can actually see a suit sleeve on the bottom of the hand, that's not important. But Gemma's sister tends to go into these sorts of details. And then you can go to other computers and you can go into My Network Places. You can click on the printer, the computer. You can then click on printers and faxes. And then you can double click on the printer, and then it will optionally offer to install print drivers onto your local machine. It will then warn you that printer drivers can contain nasty code. And if they contain nasty code, they will take your computer apart. Or wipe stuff off your hard drive, so you've got to make sure that you trust the computer that you're getting the drivers from. You then click OK and Yes to install the drivers, and then once the drivers have installed, you can then look at the print queue which shows up on the computer, and you can then put other jobs into the print queue. And I would like to point out that the print queue is in fact a print queue. The jobs at the top of the queue are going to be the ones that are... Let me get this right. The first ones to be printed. The jobs at the bottom are going to be the last one to print. We had somebody who worked at the local council where I used to live that thought that printers acted like toilets, and that if you put a big job in the top of the queue, it was going to force it all through, and that's not the way it goes. So what we have to basically say is that you get the jobs printed in order. No, I cannot go through it slowly again. That's what the recording is for, guys.
We're sorry. We know there's a lot of information to take in, and probably sometimes our accents are a little bit, yes. But, yeah, have a listen to it again, and that way you'll pick it up, okay? You can even put us on slow, perhaps, or repeat.
You can slow us all down, so it'll be like, welcome to IPE1 Lecture 2. Or we can speed us up, and we sound quite cute when you speed us up. Some of you...
Like chipmunks.
We do. We sound quite chipmunk-esque when you speed us up. I know that because I do that when I'm editing the lectures. That's right. No, there is actually slow down software that will keep the pitch the same, and you can actually slow things down without changing the pitch, and you can use things like the pacemaker plugin for Winamp, or you can use things like RecordPad, which is another utility, or WavePad that will actually do that for you. So you can slow us down so that we talk like this and the lecture goes for 5 hours.
Oh dear. Okay, and if you ever can't sleep, as I've mentioned before, turn on ITE Lecture, put it on your computer right next to your bedside, and go drifting off to sleep with the wonderful voice of Kerry or Geraldine. The cure for insomnia. Go on, Kerry.
Oh, I'm not going to do an ad because we've got a lot to get through.
Oh no, we're doing well. We're nearly finished.
That's okay. We can always finish early and go for lunch.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hurry up then. Okay. All right. I'll stop mucking around. Okay. Scanners. I'm going to just smack one of my students here. I'm not really. Okay. Scanners. Now, most of us have used scanners in our time. And the ones we are most interested in are the ones with OCR or optical character recognition. And we, as blind people, use them with a number of different programs to read text. But so scanners actually used to convert your printed data, or they can use not just printed data, they can also use convert images, and they make it into an electronic format, and then the computer can actually store it and process it. So after you've had an image scanned, it can then be saved. You can modify it, so if you've got a document on the screen that's become from a printed document to an electronic format, you can actually manipulate that text, so add things to it, take things out, So you can use it as an email attachment. So they're really, really useful things to be able to use. Number of different scanners you get, there are standalone ones, and there are also ones that need to be connected to a printer.
Now, just a thing here that took me about 2 weeks to figure out what it stood for, because I'm a bit slow sometimes. You wouldn't think so, but I am. MFC actually stands for Multifunction Center. And it is the name given to scanners, printers, copiers, combos, where you have scanner, printer, photocopier. And that's what MFC stands for. And SOHO is small office, home office. So if you see a SOHO MFC, it's not somebody who's eaten too much alphabet soup. It actually means something.
Yeah, and they are fabulous, aren't they? Because if you need a photocopy, boom, off you go. Go and print off your photocopy that you need. Really, really good to have those combo ones. Okay, so when we're talking a little bit about optical character recognition software, and that's used to convert your scanned printed page into text, and then you could edit it sort of using a word processor type program. The resolution of scanners, again, is measured like printers in DPI or dots per inch, and like printers, when you've got a higher DPI, you get a better quality of image. As Kerry just mentioned, the all-in-one devices, they have a scanner, printer, copier, fax, and they're really fabulous for your home office survey. A lot of people would be using those. They're fairly low cost these days. I'm just trying to think what I paid for mine just recently. About $90, I think, that was on sale, so that was quite good. They're easy to set up. The trouble is, of course, like all things that are all in one, once one thing breaks, you can have everything on the blitz as well. So, and they're not a really heavy use sort of machine, but although they do come in varying qualities, so, you know, obviously you pay for what you get. So, that they are really good. They're cheaper, yeah.
Well, it can be, but unfortunately sometimes the ink is so damned expensive that you end up paying more in the ink than you paid for the original multifunction altogether. Also, the scanners can be slow and of fairly low quality, and if the scanner lamps aren't particularly brilliant, you either have to put your documents extremely close to the scanner glass, or you get bad optical character recognition results. So don't think you're going to get a $100 multifunction and do all of your scanning on it. You'll probably be sadly disappointed. No, it cannot, and you must use optical character recognition software such as Abbey Fine Reader, OmniPage, Quercvile, or OpenBook to actually recognise the image. And in fact, sighted people who insist on scanning pictures into Word documents and thinking that you'll be able to read them are the biggest culprits for this problem. A picture is a picture. And a picture might be worth 1,000 words, but it isn't 1,000 words. So you do need optical character recognition software to work with that sort of image.
When you're wanting to scan books and things, or photographs, flatbed scanners are usually what's used. When you've got a flatbed scanner, you have an electronic image that's acquired, and it's, say you're putting the photograph on there face down, the scanner head then moves along, you hear that as it's moving along, and it's got a number of sensors.
Yes, scanners can be installed on networks like printers can, but keep in mind that if your computer is a long way away from the scanner, your arms aren't long enough to reach 20 metres to put pages on the scanner. So do keep that in mind.
You can also get handheld scanners. And obviously they're handheld, so they're fairly portable and pretty small generally. They are a little bit more difficult to use though. I haven't had much success with them. Have you, Kerry?
No, handheld scanners are difficult for blind people to use because it's hard to drag them in a straight line because you can't see where you're dragging them, so they tend to shake up and down. And then as soon as you've got a few degrees of skew, the OCR really stops working well. I'd seriously suggest if you were looking at putting a scanner on a network that you actually attach it to a nice fast computer that you have, and that the people actually go to that computer and scan, because otherwise you'll have trouble turning the pages of the book that you scan remotely. And cut sheet feeders tend to jam about 20 pages into what you really want to scan just after you've ducked out for a coffee. So watch out for the cut sheet feeders. Okay, bye whoever has to go to school.
Ruby.
Enjoy your school day and we'll talk to you if you have any questions. It's bye to Ruby and I'll hand it back over to Geraldine.
Okay. All right. Drum scanners, they're usually used commercially. They are these days, they're getting a lower price, so and being replaced pretty much by the, because scanners are dropping in price, by the flatbed scanners. But they are used still in commercial sort of installations. Places like, or corporate places, and that use those type of ones. So, okay, when you get your scanner, you're going to have to, again, you'll go through that process like you did with the printers, where you get the CD with all the informations, and do follow the manufacturer recommendations when you're installing your scanner.
There's a very important point, actually, I was just going to make about scanners. There's a big difference between when you plug your scanner in, that goes and now if your scanner goes, you need to unlock it, and it's very important that the scanner is locked for transportation to stop the scanner carriage from sliding along. And failure to unlock your scanner can actually damage it, and that horrific noise that you just heard then is a sign that your scanner is not happy and needs to be unlocked. And sometimes that noise can actually kill your scanner, and that's the last noise your scanner will ever make. So do make sure that you follow the instructions and unlock the scanner when required.
And also, when you want to transport your scanner, do lock it. Also very important, the opposite. Okay, some of the things you can configure on your scanner will be things like your colour, whether you want it to be colour, or there's usually a switch on the bottom that you could flick.
Or on the back edge, it depends on the scanner, yeah.
Yeah.
It actually tells you in the manual how to do that, which you'll have read before you even pulled the scanner out of its box. Now, of course, you won't. You'll have pulled it out of the box and plugged it in like everybody does, but you should read the manual in the PDF file, and it will tell you how to unlock the scanner, and you're looking for a switch or a slider or something on the back of the scanner to do that.
Okay, so as I mentioned, you can have a number of configurations, and those things like your colour or your grayscale, your quality and resolution choices, and what type of sheet feeding it's using, if it is using sheet, multiple sheet feeding or continuous. Okay, it's really important. Go on, Kerry.
I was just going to say, can anybody tell me what is the name of the drivers that drive the scanner? And I'll give you a cryptic clue. Thomas the Tank Engine. Yes, George, Twain. They're Twain drivers. No, they're Twain drivers. And they are the name of the drivers that drive your scanner, Twain. And in fact, there's another project called SANE, which is Scanner Access Now Easy, and that will allow you to hook your scanner up to the network. But don't even think about trying it unless you know exactly what you're doing, because Gemma just about ripped all of her hair out trying to get it to work. Her hair has now grown back, but the scanner still doesn't work.
What was that last question?
Grayscale. Grayscale is a scale of the colour grey from black to white.
Does that answer that question? So it's talking about a colour of shades of grey, so to speak. All right, can you type that in, Sue? Sue will type that into chat for you. Okay. Okay, so, yeah, grayscale. Okay, so it's a variation on shades of black, really, and fading out to grey, hence why it's called grey.
I will not sing Fade to Grey.
Well, go on.
Fade to Grey. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay, all right, now looking after printers, scanners, again, really important to keep them clean. Make sure before you're trying to clean them that you've not got them plugged in. Okay. Also, keeping them high quality paper, using that. Another thing to do with paper is when you get it out of its packaging, with those usually in the packages it comes in, flick the paper, okay? So you're actually letting it flick through the air sort of thing. So you're actually stopping it getting stuck together when you put it in.
Okay? I'd like to point out that when you are flicking this paper, and I've seen people not do this, make sure that you have the you hold on to one end of the paper so that it doesn't flick all over the room. And often people crack it across their knee. Well, they flick the paper and then they let go of it because they're not thinking, and then a ream of 500 sheets ends to... Network printers have an IP address. You can find the IP address by... you actually have to set the IP address and you'll follow the manufacturer's documentation. If you don't know your IP address, you should have been making better network documentation, which of course you all have. Sometimes you set the network address either by DHCP or you set it using RAP, and I'm sorry we don't cover that, so consult your printer manual or drop us an email to the discussion list, which somebody will then write back to you and tell you what you need to do.
Yeah, utilise that discussion list, you know, and ask those sort of questions on there, because you can bet your bottom dollar that somebody will know, you know, that's on list. And if they don't, then they look it up and, you know, get some sort of dialogue between the students. It's a great idea.
And it also means, and this is just an interesting point to make, that we can get back to answering the questions when we have time, so that we can answer the questions and you will get a full and complete answer other than Mr. Meany going, no, we're not covering that today. So do use that discussion list and your answers will be archived away so that you can go back and read them later, which is always handy, especially when you forget how to do things. And in fact, I refer to those discussion list archives myself on occasion.
And if you have a question that's troubling you, there's probably someone else out there that's got the same question and hasn't been gained, you know, to put that to the list. So, yeah, you do use that list and utilise it. Okay, so as I mentioned, with using good quality paper, flicking the paper so you're getting, you know, it's not sticking together when you get it in there. Use good quality ink. Don't refill ink cartridges because you're going to have probably leaking ink into your printer and you're going to have problems. As regards scanners, keep them clean again. The glass can get dirty, and again, also make sure that you're not spraying glass cleaner onto the glass.
Okay. How would there be staples on the paper, Dean? What sort of paper are you using? We usually staple it after we've printed it. Is this some new thing in Woy Woy or something where we do it the other way around?
I'm talking about scanners there. Yeah, probably talking about scanners. Yeah.
Fair enough. Scanners. Okay, I wasn't sure you were talking about scanners or printers. You can actually leave the staples on there if you're careful. You just don't scratch the scanner glass with them.
Okay, well, in this ITE1, we talk about what we should do, not what we do. That was for the benefit of one of our local students. Okay, all right, so if you've got printer problems, you're going to have to follow your ITE troubleshooting. Okay, gather your data. You remember all this? Gather data, ask open and closed questions, verify the obvious issue. Don't just jump in, try and use a simple fix, and document any problems, then document your solution. So if you get that problem again, like the archives, for you can go and look it up. Okay.
Just a note that if your printer is not working, you won't be able to print out the documentation for your problem, so keep that in mind. So you make sure that you have other methods of taking down documentation, and make sure that you back up your documentation on just more than your primary hard drives. Because a lot of people fill their hard drive up with all the information they scrounge together over about 3 to 4 years, and then the hard drive starts to make what I call marble in paint tin noise, which for Chris Legg's benefit is... And that's the end of your hard drive, and all the data you put on it is all very difficult to recover. So do make sure you have backups and that you back up your information on other places rather than just on one single hard drive.
Okay, so that brings us to the end
Yeah, let me guess. You go and you set your default printer to a printer that no longer exists, and then your whole machine locks up while you try and select the printer that you want to print to. Do not set your default printer to a network printer ever. Because Word will crash and fall over. So don't do it. Set it to a local printer. Or don't set a default printer, and that's just a little hint from there. We're a bit passionate about that one. It's like War and Peace and stuff. Don't set it to a network printer, because when the network printer is unavailable, Word will crash and behave very bizarrely. Also, if you're going to use the combo box, try using print setup rather than being a lazy person and using the combo box inside the print dialog, because the print setup one won't try and go and contact every printer as you try and scroll down through the dialog box.
Good tip. Okay, we're up to the quiz. Yay! Okay, question one. We'll see how much everyone's remembered. Which technology, and have your chat windows open and ready to type in answers, please. Which technology is used by dot matrix printers? Is it A, digital drop, B, electrostatic spray, C, electrophotographic, D, ink melting, or E, impact? Go now. Okay, the correct answer was E, impact. Okay, which phase, question two, of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? Is it A, cleaning, B, conditioning, C, developing, D, fusing, E, transferring, or F, writing? Go now. There's a lot more answers still to come there, guys. I think I only counted three or four then.
Let me guess, you all don't know, because I don't know.
It is C, developing. Okay? So the phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image is the developing stage.
And the trick is that you're applying toner to the latent image, which is the one that's been stuck on the drum, therefore it's developing because you're developing the image with the toner. I remember Ian going through that with me a couple of times every time we went through ITE. So there we go.
Okay, question three. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? Okay, so we want three. A, expensive consumables. B, high power consumption. C, limited color capability. D, noisy printing. Or E, slow printing. Or F, unable to use continuous feed paper. Disadvantages of impact printers. Yes, getting that right, aren't we? Good. Okay, and they were limited color capability, which was C. D was noisy printing, and E, they were slow to print. Well done, everybody. Okay, question four. Which type of printer melts ink and sprays it through a nozzle onto a drum and transfers an image onto the paper? Is it A, fusion ink, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, E, solid ink, or F, thermal? Yeah, they've got a few different answers there. It's actually the solid ink, okay, which was E. It actually melts the ink on and sprays it through the nozzle. Okay. Okay, question five. Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that can change direction when the print head heats the ink? I can't even say the question, yet alone get the answers out. I'll try that again, folks. Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that change direction when the print head heats the ink? Is it A, dye sublimation, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, E, solid ink, or F, thermal?
We're running out of time, guys. The answer is A, dye sublimation.
I couldn't even say it the first time, folks. You don't say it again. Okay, question six. We're nearly finished. Which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? Is it A, a digital reader, B, a printer, C, a projector, or D, a scanner? Okay, that's great. Everybody got that. That's D, a scanner. And the last question for this week is, how is the speed of a laser printer measured? Is it A, dots per minute, B, pages per minute, C, pixels per second, D, pages per second, or E, pages per week?
Please don't press enter on your answer until she's finished with the options, Attila. You've given everyone else the answer.
And yes, it was B, pages per minute. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's lesson. Next week we're going to be talking about networks. So we're getting into some really interesting stuff, local area, wide area, different types of networks. So we'll...
No.
Goodbye, farewell, it's time to say adieu, adieu, adieu to you and you and you. How was that? Okay, oh, well, I couldn't sort of say no, could I? Okay. All right, so have a good week, everyone. Now, Kerry will be back on Friday with CCNA1, and yeah, enjoy.